All right. Good evening. It's been a little while. Nice to see everybody. Nice little break. Nice to see everyone. Want to discuss, learn tonight, two desirable traits, midos, that we can Emir Tashem glean from the Parsha, that are practical, and that can Emir Tashem impact our daily life. Start with number one. Kiryas Yamsuf, splitting of the sea, this momentous occasion, spectacular. HaKadosh Baruch Hu alters the rules of nature, of Teva, and saves Klal Yisrael in this unbelievable salvation. Talking about it till this day, mention it constantly in our tradition. However, if we look a little closer, B'nai Yisrael is critiqued at this incredible time. They get criticized. We would think they would pass with flying colors. This is spectacular. This is special. We find a very different story. Source number one, Tehillim, as David HaMelech says at the end, Vayimaru al Yam. They rebelled at the Yam, bi Yam Suf, and in the Yam Suf. So Chazal, source two, asked the obvious question. Seems very repetitive, redundant. What does it mean they rebelled at the Yam and in the Yam Suf? Why does it say it twice? Vayimru aliyam biyam suf, source 2, maushne pamim. What are these two rebellions? Just say they rebelled at the yam. El alayam himru. What's the first rebellion? At the yam. Shalohayu rotzim leireid. They didn't want to descend. They didn't want to go into the waters. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the directive, gave them the command, go into the yam suf. They rebelled. They didn't listen. They utterly ignored Hashem. Ilulei shevis Yehuda shakafa tzchila. And what would have, we wouldn't have had any salvation had it not been for the courageous act of Nachshon from the tribe of Yehuda that took the plunge literally and sanctified Hashem's name. Shneamar b'seis Yisrael mimitzrayim, when we left, Haita Yehuda l'kadsho. They saved us. So the first rebellion, we didn't jump in, we didn't emerge. It had to be the bravery, the courage of Yehuda that brought salvation. Rebellion number one. So what's the second rebellion? Uvi Yamsuf Minayim Shemru. In the Yamsuf, how do we know they rebelled? And this one's even harder to swallow. Maybe the first one we could have a little bit of sensitivity, a little empathy towards. It's very scary to go into a raging sea. But the second rebellion, Mir Tashem really hit home. How do we know? Kevin Shiardu L'toch Hayam Aleitit. When they went into the river, when they went into the sea, it was filled with mud. Up to this point, it had been very moist from the water. Go to the end. And what happened? The Medrash paints this very interesting picture. Hayar Omer Ruvain L'Shimon. Ruvain said to Shimon, oh, nothing's changed. B'Mitzrayim B'Tit. When we were in Mitzrayim, we had to deal with the mud. Uvayam Tit. And now, when we're in the sea, we got to deal with mud. Nothing's changed. In Mitzrayim, we had to fashion bricks out of mud. Uvayam chomer. Now as well, we have to deal with mud. Wow. Rabbi Franz elaborates on this fascinating medrash. He says, imagine the scene. Klal Yisrael is finally free. After 210 years of oppression, slavery, brutality, massacres, babies thrown into the sea, we're finally free. And we're traveling, we're excited, and we have a screeching halt right in front of a raging sea. Behind us is the Egyptian army, the elite army with Paro rallying the troops that want to decimate us on the spot. Game over. So we're finally free, we have a sea in front of us, petrified, the Egyptian army right behind us. Nachshon takes the leap of faith, literally, the sea splits, a beautiful tree-lined path, and we're marching through. Unbelievable miracle. You're with your family, with your children. You've just been saved from a massacre, from a genocide. Imagine the guy behind you saying, oh, my shoes are getting muddy. I wish I could go back to Egypt. This is crazy. We've just been saved. We just avoided it. We avoided it all. And the guy in bed, oh man, these new, my shoes were white. I just got them on sale. I thought I was in Egypt. I want to go back. While it might sound comical, we all know people that would have similar reactions. We all could identify. We won't look at anybody, but we all could identify people that would certainly have a similar reaction. And says Rav Friend, People can find reason to complain about anything, even Kiryas Yamsuf. That's the message of the Medrash. Even when your whole family is saved, when the whole nation is saved, if you want to zone in on something negative, you will succeed. You will find it, even at this momentous, life-altering occasion. And that's always the constant challenge. What do we look at in life? What do we zone in? Do we constantly focus exclusively on the negative? Or do we try to glean the positive? A very, very tough challenge. And we see this, unfortunately, happen later on in the parsha as well. Source number 3. Vayavo'u Marasa. The nation came to Marasa. They couldn't drink the water from Mara. Because it was bitter. Therefore they called the place Mara. The simple explanation of this pasuk is as it sounds. They were very thirsty, very parched. They came to this place. And what could they do? The water's bitter. I can't drink it. Nobody likes to drink bitter water. We wouldn't go into the sea and drink seawater. We'd spit it right out. So how could you critique this nation? But the Halakha Kutzker, in his very sharp fashion, says beautifully, changes around the subject. Why couldn't they drink the water? Not kimarim him. Not because the water was bitter. Kimarim him. They were bitter. Klal Yisrael was bitter. The nation was bitter. Their attitude was bitter. They were salty. And therefore, because of their attitude, they weren't able to drink of the sweet and delicious water. Kutzker is telling us a very important insight. Hashem could provide a miracle for you. He could provide beautiful, sweet, life-quenching water that could save the nation. But what happens? Kimarim heim. The people were bitter. And since they were bitter and their attitude wasn't right, they couldn't drink the water. Our attitudes defines us, and how we view something is directly going to be our entire experience. Kimarim heim. Klal Yisrael was bitter. What a beautiful idea of the Kutzker. So unfortunately, this idea is definitely very common. Very common. That idea that we could even complain at Kiryas Yamsuf, we could be bitter and not be able to enjoy the sweet waters of Mara or the sweet waters of life. So what do we do? How do we overcome it? What's a strategy? I want to present tonight just a few simple, basic ideas. But these simple, basic ideas could be life-altering. I think number one is to acknowledge it. To realize that we're very prone to complaining, prone to being negative, and that Medrash is so deep. They complained at Kiryas Yamsuf, their shoes were getting muddy. That's us today. We're always looking at our muddy shoes, no matter what's going on. That's what we harp on, the muddy shoes. Acknowledge it, admit it. Realize that it's there, and have the desire to work on it. To adjust our attitude. There's this incredible poem called The Sculptor's Attitude. I first learned it in this great book, Easier Than You Think by Richard Carlson. It's a self-help book on happiness and attitude, exactly what we're talking about tonight. And he cites it in his book. And this is how the poem goes. I woke up early today. It's an anonymous author. I woke up early today, excited over all I get to do before the clock strikes midnight. I have responsibilities to fulfill today. I'm important. My job is to choose what kind of day I'm going to have. Today I could complain. I can complain because the weather is rainy, or I could be thankful that the grass is getting watered for free. Today I can feel sad that I don't have more money, or I could be glad that my finances encourage me to plan my purchases wisely and guide me away from waste. Today I can grumble about my health, or I can rejoice that I'm alive. Today I can lament over all that my parents didn't give me when I was growing up, or I can feel grateful that they allowed me to be born. Today I can cry because roses have thorns, or I can celebrate that thorns have roses. Today I can mourn my lack of friends, or I can excitedly embark upon a quest to discover new relationships. Today I can whine because I have to go to work, or I can shout for joy because I have a job to do. Today I can murmur dejectedly because I have to do housework. I can feel, or I can feel honored because the Lord has provided shelter for my mind, body, and soul. Today stretches ahead of me waiting to be shaped. And here I am, the sculptor who gets to do the shaping. What today will be like is up to me. I get to choose what kind of day I will have. Very, very beautiful, powerful, insightful poem. And the message very clear. We always have the choice. We could always make an articulate argument for either side, how we view something. To view it in a negative light, to look at the muddy shoes, to look at the water, us being bitter, or to be positive, to see what's going on. And it's always there in front of us. That's our bechir, that's our becharta bechaim, to choose life. Which will we focus on? Which element will we direct our attentions, our heart and souls towards? So that's Eitzah number one. Having the proper sculptor's attitude to shape our point of view, our perspective, in a positive, healthy fashion. And a second Eitzah, again, very obvious, but unfortunately escapes us, says the Mishnah Avos, source number 4, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai had 5 primary disciples, and he told them, go out and find the proper path. Amar lehem, Se'u, go out. Uru, Ezui derech yishara she'idbak b'ha'adam. What's the proper path that a person should cling towards? Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ayin Tova, a good eye. What does it mean to have a good eye? Says the Rambam, source 5, the parish of Mishnah of the Rambam, Ayin Tova, ha'istapku b'mashiyesh la'adam. Being satisfied with what we have. Sumeich b'chelko. V'hi m'malos hamidos. It's the most desirable of traits. The Rambam's saying, when we're satisfied with what we have, it's the most desirable course of action. To really internalize the constant blessings that Hashem showers upon us each and every day. And not just to do lip service, but to think about it, to internalize it, to let it to sink in. That allows us to remain positive, to be in the proper state of mind. Oftentimes we compose laundry lists of everything going wrong. We should do the opposite. Compose lists of everything going right. Of the endless brachas that we're blessed to have every single moment. V'hima malos amidos is the most desirable of traits, having that ayin tova, seeing the good in our lives and as well seeing the good in others. Not just at our lives, how beautiful it is, but this extends to people as well. When we look at other people, do we only focus on their flaws or do we also focus on their positive character traits? Sometimes we get blinded, we only focus on the negativity. And we dismiss them, we write them off, we disqualify them. We want nothing to do with them. But what about the other perspective? Seeing the positivity in their lives. As the Sfas Emes says, we have to judge V'avidan l'kol adam l'kaf z'chus. Says the Sfas Emes, kol ha'adam, not kol adam, kol ha'adam. We have to judge the entire person, is in the entirety. He's a complex human being. He is good and he is bad. Judge the whole picture. We should focus on the good. Focus on the great. And lastly, from having a good attitude, focusing on positivities in general, in our lives and other people, let's take it one step further. To increase positivity in the world, to have a proactive stance, to increase light and simcha. We have a Mirkaz Arav graduate, kind of. The Heiliger Rav Kook, Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook, the great, great, great chief rabbi, pre the State of Israel. He writes, as well, in a very famous piece, line number 6, Al Kain, Hatzadikim Atahorim Ein Akobli Malachoshech, the great tzadikim, they don't complain about darkness, Elamosifim Or, they increase light. Ein Akobli Malarisha, Elamosifim Sedek, they don't complain about wickedness, what do? They increase righteousness. Ein Akobli Malakfira, they don't complain about heresy, Elamosifim Emuna, they add Emuna, they add faith. In a kobli mala ba'aros, they don't complain about ignorance. Elamosifim chachma. They rather, what do? They add wisdom. This is the highest level Rav Kook's teaching us. Instead of complaining that everything's wrong, so many people are wrong and they're wicked and unjust and the standards of morality have been lessened and people are inconsiderate and they're terrible and shout from the rooftops. What's the best approach, says Rav Kook? Make it better. Don't complain, make a change. There's ignorance, add wisdom. There's wickedness, add righteousness. There's darkness, add light. That's the approach. It's so easy to complain and to point out all the negatives. Says Rav Kook, add light, add energy, add wisdom, add righteousness, add faith, add chokhmah. That's the best approach. Make the world better in every way possible. Don't get caught up in negativity and cynicism, in sarcasm and darkness, and want to run away and hide in a corner and bring everybody down with you. Should be the exact opposite, says Rav Kook. Bring the light, bring the energy, bring the joy to all of our surroundings. Bring it in ourselves, bring it in others, bring it to the world around us. And that's why we have the title, Or L'Goyim, and a light to the nations. Literally, Kipshuto Kamashma'o, to literally be a light. Could always sit. It's so easy to complain and be, now look at today. But what's our job? An Or L'Goyim, a light to the nations. Illuminate, create a beautiful seed. So that's the first trait tonight, that ever elusive, the ever escaping trait of positivity. To try our best to not fall into the traps, which is so easy to do, but to work on it. It's a clear avodah, it takes time. I think naturally it's easier to complain. Just easier to complain and find the negative. But through avodah, through working on ourselves, we can change ourselves and everybody around us. I want to work now on the second trait. Source number 7. At the end of the parsha, we have the war with Amalek. Moshe commands Yoshua to take charge, take the lead. And Moshe ascends to the top of the mountain. Source 7. Vide Moshe kveidim. The hands of Moshe were heavy. Vayichu evin vayisimu tachtav. They take a stone, they place it underneath him. Vayeshev aleh, and he sits on it. So Moshe Rabbeinu, the fearless leader, sitting on a rock. The Gemara Tana says, Yudal from an Avsor Seid. V'chilo ayalo l'moshe kar achad u'kasa achad l'shev aleha. Moshe doesn't have a mattress or a pillow to sit on. Moshe is no spring chicken at this point. Why is he sitting on a rock? He should sit on a pillow, a mattress, a couch. Take it easy. The Gemara picks up on him. Sit down, relax. Why is Moshe sitting on a rock? Sit on a mattress. Says Moshe, Elokach Amar Moshe. Hoil, since. V'Yisrael shruin v'tzar. Klai Yisrael finds himself in a situation of distress, of pain and anguish. Afani ayeimem v'tzar. I will be with them in their pain. I will identify with them. I will empathize with them. They're at war. I'm not going to sit on a pillow. I'm going to sit on a rock. That's why he elected to sit on a rock and not a pillow. Klai Yisrael's in pain. I'm going to symbolize that as well. He clearly is not fighting, but he wanted to identify with them. He wanted to be with them. And where does Moshe Rabbeinu learn of this trait? From the Ribono Shel Olam himself, the Chvodo V'Atzmo, Source 9. At the initial revelation, when Hashem reveals himself to Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayera Malach Hashem Elav, an angel of Hashem appeared to him, Belabat Esh, in a blaze of fire, Mitoch HaSneh, from amid the bush. Vayar Vineh, he saw and behold, HaSneh Boer Ba'esh, the bush was burning in the fire, V'HaSneh Enene Ukal, but the bush was not consumed. So we see this really, really famous, famous scene of the burning bush. Says Rashi, citing Chazal, Source 10, Mitoch HaSneh, Hashem appears to him in a lowly, lowly burning bush. V'lo ilan acher. Why not another tree? This is the initial revelation. This is going to set the tone for the Geula. Should appear in a beautiful tree, a luscious tree, maybe have some fruits, maybe have something beautiful, make it a little more stylish, prestigious. Why is Hashem appearing to him in a lowly burning bush? Mishum, why? Imo anochi betzora. Hashem says from Tehillim, I'm with them in their pain. Klal Yisrael is in Egypt, being harassed by the Egyptians. Hashem says, I'm with them. And Hashem symbolizes this by being in a burning bush, a lowly bush, down to the earth. Hashem says, Klal Yisrael is being pushed to the ground, day in and day out. I am kivyachol with them down in the ground. And that's why he doesn't appear to Moshe Rabbeinu in a burning bush, in a high and beautiful tree, but rather a burning bush. And such an important lesson. Sometimes we hear of certain things going on in Klal Yisrael, certain sorrows, tragedies, and initial reaction is, they live far away, they live in Israel, they're in the city, they're in Muncie, they're in Brooklyn, I don't know them. But that's not proper. We always have to say, Imo Anochi Betzara. We have to feel the pain. We have to cry with them. We have to be with them. We have to daven with them, identify with them. They're fighting in Eretz Yisrael. What could I do? I'm 6,000 miles away. I'm not in Sahel. I'm not in the army. We have to feel it. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't fighting either. At the very least, he sat on a rock. It's very deep. We have to feel uncomfortable. We have to check the news. We have to think about it. We can't be oblivious to the plight of Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael, even if it's 6,000 miles away, even if we're not fighting. We have to daven. We have to think. We have to get a soldier's name. Do what we can to make the situation better. Not hide our eyes. Chas v'shalom. Empathy. Imo Anochi Betzara, a trait that Moshe Rabbeinu learned from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, passed on as our Masora. I want to conclude with a great story of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. My father got to meet him. Anybody else get to meet Rav Moshe Feinstein? No? All right. He's the grandparent of Psar Kedushin. Okay, so in this crowd, just my father, I got to meet the great Rav Moshe. And one day his driver came to pick him up for shir. Rav Moshe was known to be extremely punctual. It's the Gadol Hador. And he wasn't coming out. So the driver got very nervous. He always was on time to the T. Why isn't the great Rav Moshe coming out? Where is he? So he goes into the house to find out. Is everything okay? He's very nervous. He goes in the house and he hears uncontrollable sobbing and tears and crying. Gets even more nervous. And he hears it coming from Rav Moshe's room. Rav Moshe, he recognizes his voice and another person. He's in a dilemma. It's time for shir, time to get ready to go to shir. But he hears the crying. He makes a decision to open the door slightly. Very courageous. He opens the door. Rav Moshe sees him, looks at his clock and says, "Oy vey, I know it's time for shir. Give us a minute." Closes the door. A few moments later, Rav Moshe comes out, escorting an elderly man with a cane, walking out very slowly, coming out. Rav Moshe goes, washes off his face, wipes away all the tears. See, it really took a toll, washes his face. And then he goes with the driver on the way to yeshiva. They hurry their way to shir. The driver, of course, wants to know, what happened? What happened? Was there a tragedy? Was there a death? Something horrible, a catastrophe? And Rav Moshe says, "I don't know what happened. No tragedy happened." So the driver says, "What does that mean? The Rav, you're crying hysterically, sobbing with this gentleman. Moshe, I don't know what happened." The driver says, "What?" He says, "Let me explain. This gentleman came in to my room, said a few words. I couldn't make out what he said. It was unintelligible words, couldn't make it out. And then he starts crying hysterically." Moshe said, "I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. So I cried with him. I cried with him. Because when a Jew cries, how could you not cry with him? When a Jew is sobbing, I don't know what the reason is. I don't know what he said. But I'm going to cry with him, and I'm going to mourn with him, and I'm going to weep with him. Imo anochi betzara." As Rav Moshe Feinstein learned from Moshe Rabbeinu, learned from Hashem. The chain that Mirtz Hashem transmits to this generation. The value of empathy. Never to say, "I don't understand, it's too far away. It's not my immediate circle. It's not my hashkafa. It's not my crew. It's not my circle." Chas v'sholem. We're one mishpacha. And to train ourselves with that sensitivity. So Bezerat Hashem, these two incredible traits. Number one, of positivity. To remember that medrash. That they even complained about muddy shoes at Yom Suf. Happens to us all the time. We can have an incredible situation and we hone in on that one slight level of discomfort. But to work on it. To work on being positive. To work on looking for the good in ourselves, looking for the good in others, looking for the good in life. And as the great Rav Kook said, to not just sit there and complain, but to increase light, wisdom, sensitivity, beauty, and kedusha in the world. And the beautiful trait of empathy. Moshe Rabbeinu elected to sit on a rock. Bnei Israel's fighting in war. He's not sitting on a comfortable mattress. Hashem will appear in a bush, a lowly bush, because Bnei Israel's suffering. And to be like the great Rav Moshe Feinstein. If a Jew's crying, even if we don't know why, we should have the strength to cry with them. To cry with them. And Amir Tashem, with these traits of positivity and empathy, we could become much more refined people. Yashkoch.